Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 22nd of July. In a story that wasn't widely reported yesterday, for the first time in 70 years, Congress is looking at closing holes in the outdated federal law that allows chemicals linked to cancer, birth defects, learning disabilities, and other illnesses in the products we use on our bodies every day. Yesterday, Representatives Jan Schakowsky, Ed Markey from Massachusetts, Tammy Baldwin introduced the State Cosmetics Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010, which gives the U.S. Food and Drug Administration authority to ensure that personal care products are free of harmful ingredients. The legislation, of course, would affect every American, everybody who uses shampoo or deodorant or moisturizer or lipstick. More and more people are concerned about unsafe chemicals in our lives, and so we're going to be talking about the chemicals that are used in all of these personal care products and why it has remained free of any kind of regulation for safety for so many years, and whether or not this bill will have pretty easy going or will not. Our guest this hour is Stacy Malkin, co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Stacy. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address, talk@WPR.org. I also want to remind you that we are on Facebook, and lo and behold, we're getting a discussion going now among the listeners who comment. They're commenting on each other's comments now, which is terrific. So you can go to our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn, that's D-U-N-N show. Hi, Stacy. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Our great pleasure. I didn't know that this industry was as unregulated as it is, and for such a long period of time. What happened?
Yes, it's surprising to a lot of people. Most people think if you can buy a product on the shelf, it's safe. But with cosmetics, nobody's watching the store, and it's been that way for many decades. You know, the law was originally put in place in 1938 that gives FDA authority over cosmetics. But that law, unfortunately, includes very little authority for FDA. It's a 100-page law. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act of 1938, and about a page and a half of it is devoted to cosmetics. And it's mostly about what the FDA can't do. So they are not allowed to require safety assessments of cosmetics or the ingredients of them. They don't do any sorts of monitoring of health effects of highly exposed populations, such as salon workers. They can't even require recalls of cosmetic products. So there's very little authority. The system that we have is basically that the cosmetics industry gets to decide for itself what's safe. And unfortunately, they're not always making the best choices.
And do you know why they were exempted from any kind of regulation? Did they lobby against it many years ago, or what happened?
Well, they've been lobbying ever since to keep the regulation very minimal. You know, the industry was at first regulated because there were some problems with cosmetics and people were being harmed, and so they put these minimal regulations in place. And then the industry has really done a pretty good job of making sure that things stay essentially unregulated. They have a large trade association that has many lobbyists that make many visits to the Hill. And they've, whenever it has come up about, hey, we need to regulate these products, we should be looking at the safety of the chemical in these products, the industry has responded with proposing voluntary programs. We'll do it ourselves, and here's how we'll do it. And
right.
So they did that in the 1970s. They set up an industry-funded panel called Cosmetic Ingredients Review Panel, which is in charge of looking at the safety of cosmetic ingredients. And we've had a lot of criticisms about that panel. The biggest thing is the industry is free to ignore their recommendations, and they often do. So they've at times said this or that chemical is unsafe or should be used in certain concentrations. And we still find examples of products on the market violating those recommendations. But the bigger problem is that they've assessed only a small percentage of the chemicals that are actually used in cosmetics, only about 13%. And they've done cursory reviews. They look mostly for short-term health effects like rashes or things like that, but not necessarily the long-term health effects like cancer, learning disabilities, and the other chronic long-term health effects.
What have you learned about the ingredients that are in, and I'm wondering what products they are, the ingredients linked to cancer, birth defects, and developmental harm?
Well, we've done a huge amount of research over the last 6 years, my group, the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. We've sent hundreds of products to laboratories to test them for chemicals, and also our partners at the Environmental Working Group have built the Skin Deep database, which is the world's largest database of chemicals in cosmetics. You can go on and look up your favorite products and find out more than you ever wanted to know about what's in them. We know from that research that many, many products on the market contain chemicals linked to cancer. Some examples would be baby shampoos. Many children's bath products that we've looked at have been contaminated with formaldehyde and 1,4-dioxane. Those are two carcinogens.
In baby shampoo?
In baby shampoo, yeah. And these are products that are labeled pure, gentle, the number one choice of hospitals.
Right.
Yes. And those contaminants are quite common in all kinds of shampoo products, not just baby products, but adult products, body washes. A lot of companies are using formaldehyde-releasing preservatives in everything from shampoos to makeup, and those do create formaldehyde contamination in the products. We're also concerned about fragrances. We recently did a study looked at 17 top-selling colognes and perfumes. We looked at some celebrity brands like Britney and J.Lo, the male body sprays that are all the rage, Old Spice and Abercrombie and Fitch and Axe. And we found that all of these products contain many chemicals that are not listed on the labels. The companies are able to keep fragrance chemicals a trade secret. So we had to send them to a lab and do a very expensive analyzation to even figure out what was in there. And what we learned was that each product had an average of 14 chemicals that weren't listed on the labels. And they also contained many allergens, chemicals that can trigger allergy reactions like headaches and wheezing. And, of course, a lot of people have those sorts of reactions to fragrance. And they also contained a lot of hormone disruptors. And many of the products contained a chemical called diethyl phthalate, which has been linked to sperm damage in adult men and also to attention deficit disorder in children and abnormal genital development in babies. And that chemical we found in 12 of the 17 products, including many of the men's products like Abercrombie and Fitch and Old Spice. And that's just so ironic to me that these products that market themselves as being, you know, making women fall at the feet of men, you know, these products will make you attractive and lovable. They actually contain a chemical that could be harmful to male reproductive health.
Goodness. Why are they put into these products? What's the purpose of it?
That particular chemical is used as a fragrance component. It helps the fragrances stick. You know, if you think about, like, what kind of chemistry does it take to actually make a fragrance stay on your skin or your clothes all day? You know, there's some pretty serious chemistry going on there. And unfortunately, they don't seem to have figured out how to make fragrances without a whole bunch of allergenic sensitizing chemicals. We found an average of 10 of those types of chemicals in every fragrance that we looked at.
Goodness. And to go back to the baby shampoo for a moment, the formaldehyde, what's the purpose of that?
The formaldehyde comes about if companies are using certain preservatives. So some examples of chemicals that you might have seen on labels, quaternium 15, that's a preservative used in Johnson's baby shampoo, and many baby products actually in the Johnson's line have quaternium 15, which is itself an allergen. Some people are very sensitive to it and will have skin reactions or contact dermatitis. but it also releases formaldehyde into the product, which is both an allergen and a carcinogen.
Wow.
So the quaternium 15, diazidal urea, those sorts of chemicals, there's a whole long list of them. And it's unfortunate that you have to do a lot of research to be able to figure out what's in these products and what's safe. It's not just a matter of, you know, going to the store and trusting the labels.
What is the name of the website again, Skin Deep?
So the Skin Deep database, you can find it at safecosmetics.org.
Safecosmetics.org, okay.
Safecosmetics.org, yes. And it's, I'll give you another URL for it as well, cosmeticdatabase.org. So either safecosmetics.org or cosmeticdatabase.org will bring you to the database, and you can look up products by name, or you can go in and search for shampoos, and it will show you all 1,300 shampoos that are in the database, and they're listed from least to most toxic.
Goodness.
So that's a scale of 0 to 10.
Let's go to phone calls. We have several coming in. Karen in Door County, hi.
Hi, this is Karen, Karen Caesar. I got to turn that down.
Okay.
I'm just sitting here with my son, Maxwell, and I heard you, Stacy. Stacy, I know you from a long time working with the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. I make a line of certified organic products and have been doing so for the last 16 years here, and when I started making organic products, people really didn't understand why I would even try to do that, and I have to say it's because of the grassroots work of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, which, it hasn't been mentioned, is a really a it's a coalition of the Breast Cancer Action Fund and the Environmental Working Group and Friends of the Earth and Women's Voices from the Earth and all kinds of environmental groups who came together with a common purpose. And my call is really just to say good on you. The recent legislation that's coming through on a federal and on a state level is fantastic, and it's really a testament to what can be done when citizens get together to make a difference in their own lives and in the lives of their, you know, of their community. So, you know, from Trillium Organics to you, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that comment. And I also want to put it back at you and say thank you to Trillium and to all of the small business owners out there who are really having a huge impact on the industry too, because that's where the formulations are happening to figure out, you know, how to really innovate the safe products. You guys are figuring it out. And so it's also exciting to see that happening in the industry. And also on the bill, I'm glad you brought that up. I want to mention it's so important for small business owners too to support it and to come out and say, you know, hey, here's the problems in the industry that we see, we're in alignment with how they need to be fixed. That's going to be critical in the months ahead as we fight and lobby for this bill, because it is going to be an uphill climb.
Was it difficult to get sponsors for this bill? And I guess the other part of the question is, why did this bill happen right now?
Well, we've been working for a long time with members of Congress, and the sponsors are Jan Schakowsky, Edward Markey, and Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. And thank you also to them so much, because they're really champions on this issue and they're really out in front. We're looking now for more co-sponsors, so that's the initial drive will be for co-sponsors. So please call your other representatives and ask them to sign on to the bill. I do think that there's a great interest in this topic now on Capitol Hill. In fact, there was a great blog today in the New York Times about Fran Drescher, who is an actress that was on the show The Nanny, if you remember that. And she's a great advocate for cancer prevention and women's health. She was lobbying on the Hill yesterday, and there's a piece in the Times about her meeting with a bunch of senators, and they were quite happy to be meeting with her and hear what she had to say. So, you know, I think it's getting a lot of attention, this bill. Mm-hmm. And I think that also there's a recognition that this is an important issue to women and that politicians have a lot to gain by getting on board with this. Because it's also common sense. It would set up a system that people think already exists. like you were saying earlier, Kathleen. People believe these products are regulated. There's some sort of safety assessments. So we're just trying to put that system in place that people think already exists.
We're welcoming phone calls and emails as well. For Stacey Malkin, co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. She's a leading expert on toxic chemicals in beauty products and chemical regulatory policies, and is frequently interviewed on a number of national and state and local television and radio programs. Our conversation timely because for the first time in 70 years, Congress yesterday, representatives, you heard her name them, introduced the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010, which is H.R. 5786, giving the U.S. Food and Drug Administration authority to ensure that personal care products are free of harmful ingredients. So let's go to more of your phone calls momentarily. The email address is talk@wpr.org, and the phone number here is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to more of your phone calls. 800-486-8655. Betsy is next from River Falls. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. Good morning to both of you. I'm concerned about nanotechnology. I was listening to Science Friday one day, and Ira Flatow was talking to somebody who was involved in nanotechnology, and they were using it in cosmetics. And Ira Flatow asked if it had been tested to see if it was safe, and the man who was doing the thing said, oh, gosh, we never thought of that. Mm. So my question is, are nanotechnology things being used in cosmetics? Please and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for that question. The answer is yes, and we're really concerned about it too. And nanotechnology, for those who might not know, it's just basically tiny, tiny little chemicals that can penetrate unusually deeply into the body, you know, unfortunately, and show some sort of strange toxicities. Definitely needs to be studied. And unfortunately, the beauty industry has been rushing ahead to incorporate nanotech as the next great thing without doing the health and safety studies first. So we're finding it in sunscreens. A lot of companies are using nano-sized titanium dioxide. And titanium dioxide is an effective sunscreen chemical, but in nano form, we don't know. It shows, you know, it's showing concern with the early studies on nanotitanium dioxide. But again, they've just rushed ahead and put these chemicals in the products without doing the safety studies first. We're also concerned about finding them in mineral makeup, and we're going to be doing some studies to look for nanoparticles. They also don't have to be labeled. They sometimes are, so you should definitely try to avoid products if you see marketing terms like nanovectors or nanoized, or if it just says that anything is a nanoparticle in there, I would avoid that product. And we need to push for FDA to label nanotech, but also this bill would help address this issue too by requiring the safety studies.
So if you, everybody wants to be clean, wash hair and probably use some kind of moisturizer to straighten it out and put on deodorant so you don't become offensive during the course of the day. And some of us, myself included, like to wear a little lipstick. And I guess the question is, can you do all these things quite safely? Are there enough products around that are free of these chemicals?
Yes, absolutely. And I still love products and use products. People often ask me, do you wear makeup? And yes, I still do. Not as much as I used to, but I still love my makeup. And there are many great, wonderful products on the market without the toxic chemicals. And as I was saying earlier, I think that the small companies in the natural products industry are really the ones who have been figuring that out. And even just over the last few years, I think the products have made a dramatic improvement. So they really do work as well or better. Even the makeups. and the mascaras, and of course the skin lotions and shampoos, and those have been, companies have been working on them for a while. So lots of great products. I always tell folks that the best advice I have is to simplify. You know, look for products with fewer ingredients, simpler ingredient decks. Also look for local companies. I love to buy from local independent companies, and, you know, companies that you feel like you can trust.
Right.
You know, I've been looking at this industry for a long time, and I can tell you who I don't trust, and unfortunately it's every company that you're going to find advertised in the major magazines and find at your local drugstore. All the big companies are using hazardous chemicals, even though they know already themselves how to make the safer alternatives, because a lot of them have their green brand. You know, Estee Lauder, for example, has Origins, and it claims to be free of parabens and a whole bunch of toxins. And that's great, but if Estee Lauder knows how to get those chemicals out of its Origins brand, they need to be phasing those chemicals out of their products across the board.
Well, if we're having such problems determining what's natural, what's organic when it comes to food, I guess the question is still there. How do you know, because they're not regulated either, to determine whether or not those products are pure, right?
Right. You do have to do research. The cosmetics industry is even much more confusing than food, because at least with food you do have the clear organic standards where you can't even use that word if your product doesn't meet the rigorous organic standards. But with personal care products, that's not the case. You can put the word organic on a product, or natural, or hypoallergenic, and it doesn't mean anything. There's no legal standards whatsoever. So you have to look at the chemicals on the labels. Mm. Again, you can also look at the Skin Deep database at safecosmetics.org to start to figure out which companies are making the better products. But it's another reason why I like to go with the local company angle. You know, I like to go to local trade shows and farmers markets and actually meet people when I can who are making the products or making the food, and just try to buy local as often as possible.
Great. We go next to Cirilla from Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hi, good morning. What a timely show this is. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I've had the great fortune to meet Karen Caesar, the formulator and owner of Trillium Organics, located in Door County, Wisconsin. And I met her about 20-some years ago. And I have been so worried about my nieces, who are anywhere from 10 to 17 years old. There's about six of them, and they are all into this nanotechnology mineral makeup that cost a fortune, and I keep lecturing them, I do not know what's going into your blood system. Stop using these things, please. And my rule of thumb is, if you can't pronounce it, don't put it on your face.
That's pretty good. That is concerning, and that's happening with so many young girls. And there was an article in the New York Times recently about how tween girls are getting increasingly targeted by the beauty industry, trying to get them started on products early, and how girls as young as 10 are getting their hair dyed now. That's really concerning, because those are the years, preteen and teen years, when your body is developing. So many things are happening in the body, and so toxic chemicals interfering with that is a much higher risk, especially when you look at all the hormone-disrupting chemicals. Environmental Working Group did a study recently looking at teenage girls and found an average of 13 hormone-disrupting cosmetic chemicals in their urine. And that was things like parabens and triclosan, which is in antibacterial soaps. You should all definitely avoid that. They also find phthalates and musk chemicals in their bodies. And so, you know, these chemicals are getting inside us. It is a bigger concern that young girls are getting so much exposure. And they're also very interested, of course, in products. So it is an opportunity, if you can get them interested in being, you know, thought leaders in their communities and among their friends in finding out about safe products. You know, give them the tools, show them Skin Deep. I also like to show young girls the video online called Dove Evolution that was put up by the company Dove, which does have some toxicity problems. But they also have this great video which shows how much the image of a model is manipulated with a computer. Mm-hmm. It's quite dramatic to see. I mean, we all know that airbrushing happens, but when you actually see what they do to her face on the computer, changing everything about the structure of her face, the length of her neck, the width of her eyes, to the point where you realize you're looking at a computer-generated image and not a person, and that so many of the images we see in the magazines are those computer-generated non-humans. I just think that helping young girls to understand that and start to see through the media messages of what the companies are telling them is really important. And with the expensive nanoized mineral makeup, it's all, of course, marketing. You know, the fact that we think we have to go to Sephora and buy $20 versions of products that cost $5 at the drugstore, it's the same chemical formulations in all of those products.
Thank you, Cirilla, very much for the call. And they're darned effective with their marketing, too. This is a huge business.
Huge. $50 billion business.
Wow. And
yes, and they are at us from the time we can see and hear with messages about how we're supposed to look and be in the world and how their products can make us whole and fix our flaws.
Right. So this antibacterial soap is a lot of hooey?
It is a lot of hooey.
Really?
In fact, the FDA came out and said it's no more effective than plain soap and water.
Huh.
Yeah, so antibacterial soap, you know, just wash your hands with plain soap and water. It's just as effective without the toxins.
Richard from Nina, hi.
Hi. I was going to ask if getting the big-name brands, if there's any advantage there, but I think you already answered that question. So I have a different question, which is people for years have been concerned about animal testing.
Right.
If we want to be sure that the products are good and safe, how should they be tested if we don't want to use animals?
Well, that's a good question and a huge issue. And the bill addresses that issue by saying there needs to be new technologies put in place that do exist for how we look at chemicals without relying so much on animal testing. Right now what's happening is there's so much duplicative testing going on. There, you know, for example, I've studied a lot of chemicals called phthalates, which I mentioned earlier are the diethyl phthalate is in a lot of the fragrances. That chemical has been studied for 30 years again and again and again on all various species of animals, and they've known for 25 years that it's causing birth defects in lab animals. And, you know, now they're finding similar indications in human studies that are being done. But enough is enough. Like, let's get that chemical off the market. It should have been gotten off the market 25 years ago instead of arguing about it for decades and doing more studies. So that kind of thing is happening a lot. Another thing that's happening a lot is the companies doing their own testing. Who knows what they're finding or what kind of testing we're doing because we can't find out about it. So the bill would also require data sharing. You know, would open up those vaults that we've heard, for example, exist at L'Oreal, where they've got so many studies that supposedly are there, but nobody's seen them. So requiring them to share those studies with the industry, because people in the industry do need information and the best available data about what we know about these chemicals. So first step, getting all of that stuff shared and transparent, and then figuring out how do you build a system that does enable us to assess chemicals for safety but doesn't rely on animal testing. It's a big challenge, but it has to be done.
Let's take a couple emails here. Two callers wanted to know about paraben used in sunscreens and other products. Is it cancerous?
Parabens are concerning because they can act like estrogen in the body, so they have weak estrogenic effects. That is concerning because we see from the science that the more a woman is exposed to estrogen throughout her life, the higher her risk of breast cancer. So there are risks of early puberty, and we're seeing early puberty a lot, especially among African-American girls. And then also the earlier a girl goes into puberty, the higher her risk of breast cancer. And that's related to longer exposure to estrogen. So with those things in mind, it makes sense to avoid synthetic forms of estrogen whenever we can. I think that's important, and I certainly try to do that. And parabens is an avoidable source of estrogen exposure. And the problem, in my mind with parabens is that they're used so often. They're in so many products, and so many products have multiple parabens. So when I, in the book, I talk about how I used to love makeup as a teenager, and I used lots of products. I was using about 20 products a day. And that's probably pretty typical of teenagers, you know, with the makeup, and you get into all kinds of the eyeshadows and mascaras and all that stuff. So for the book, I went back and I looked up all of those products that I had been using as a teen and did the safety assessments on Skin Deep. What I found out about that daily routine was that, first of all, it was 230 chemicals being exposed to.
Oh my gosh.
And 26 of those were parabens. So think about that. Like, the companies that still use parabens say, well, it's just a little bit and, you know, it's only in my product. But it's so many exposures to parabens every day, and that's just from cosmetics. It could also be in food and water and all of that. So, you know, we're looking at potentially dozens of doses of parabens every day, day after day. That's not being studied. So I avoid them because the words on the label, it's easy to see, and there's plenty of products without them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Richard. Pat in Appleton, hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been such a fan and so grateful for your website for several years now. I teach aromatherapy at Fox Valley Technical College in Appleton, and I also started making some handmade beauty products because of a book that I read that was recommended by a student. It's called Beauty to Die For by Judith Vance. You've probably heard of it.
Yes, that's a great book.
That's the book that first turned me on to this whole issue. And I have to say, usually when I talk about it, people are kind of shocked and they're like, no way. But I tell them, just take baby steps, because it may seem overwhelming at first, you know, when you first start to learn about all these chemicals. And the other article that I recommend to people is The Pollution Within, which was published in National Geographic in 2006.
Yes,
so, excellent. So I want to thank you so much for all of your work in Skin Deep, too. And I'm sending people there as often as I can.
Great. Yeah, those are excellent resources. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And I also totally agree that baby steps. It is overwhelming to start to think about this, and I hear that reaction a lot from folks, although I think it's also quite empowering once you do the research and realize, okay, it's not that hard. There are alternatives. It actually feels great to buy those alternatives. Feels much better than standing around in the Walgreens and trying to figure out which shampoo is going to make my hair the most shiny and bouncy when it's like all marketing BS. But the baby steps is important, and also just thinking about less is better than more. You know, wherever you can reduce fragrances or unnecessary chemical exposures, you can do it, and then take your time, you know, eventually. I think once you start down this road, you do eventually get to the point where it's actually hard for me to walk through a Walgreens and think, like, I don't want to buy most any product on the shelf, either personal care products or food or laundry detergents or dish soaps. None of it. Hmm. It's all full of chemicals. I mean, that's the real truth of it, is that these chemical problems are in a lot of the products that we use in our daily lives.
Stacey Malkin is our guest this hour, co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. Yesterday, legislation was introduced in Congress, the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010, H.R. 5786, which would give the U.S. Food and Drug Administration authority to ensure that personal care products are free of harmful ingredients. This is an industry that essentially has not been regulated for years and years and years and years. So we're talking about why and what some of the harmful ingredients are and what the alternatives are this hour of the program. We have one line open if you'd like to join us. And you can also send a message, too. We'll get to a few more of your Facebook messages momentarily. The number is 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. the co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry, is with us. One of the areas that you can smell in these products that something strange is in it is nail care and nail polish remover. All of that kind of smells, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it's really some of the most toxic products out there are the nail products. Yeah, nail products and the other product in that category would be the hair dyes, relaxers, and perms.
Mm-hmm.
I put those in the most toxic stuff categories. Yeah, and unfortunately, those are the products, of course, used in salons, and so we're really concerned about the worker exposures. There are better and safer alternatives, though, for the nail products and starting to get there with the hair dyes. And we've seen a positive change in the nail products industry over the past few years because we really fought with companies over eliminating from their products what we called the toxic trio of chemicals, and that was dibutyl phthalate, toluene, and formaldehyde. If you see any of those on the label of your nail polish, you definitely want to choose another brand. So that's a dibutyl phthalate, toluene, and formaldehyde. And we went to the companies and said we wanted them to reformulate because they were already having to take dibutyl phthalate out of products sold in Europe. And so we had this took us a few years, unfortunately. You would have thought it would be just instantaneous. Companies were taking the chemicals out in Europe. They'd just take them out here. But we actually had to fight quite hard for that. And we did a campaign against OPI nail products, which if you've ever been to a nail salon, you have probably seen that brand. It's in most salons in 70 countries, and it's a company based in L.A., OPI. So they have, you know, the fun color names, like I'm Not Really a Waitress Red and those sorts of names. And we went to the company and had this conversation with them about you're taking the chemicals out in Europe. Why don't you do that here? And they were not willing to do that. They were very nice to us and met with us, which was more than I can say for a lot of the big beauty companies. We had a couple of meetings with their scientists and our researchers, and they said, well, we're not going to take this chemical out now. We think it's safe. We think they're overreacting in Europe. So after a couple of those meetings didn't go anywhere, we took the argument to the streets, and we had some street theater in Santa Monica where we had some ads in the paper. We dressed up like beauty queens, and we had this ad that had a character called Mistreatment. She was a beauty queen with a little sash that said Mistreatment, and we made up in this ad some of our own fun color names like I Can't Believe It's a Carcinogen and things like that. And so that got the attention from reporters and from salon workers and owners, and they were sending thousands of letters to the company. And they did, in 2006, come out and say they were reformulating their product to remove that toxic trio of chemicals. And now they actually advertise that they're free of all those chemicals. So they see it as a marketing benefit, and I think that's a good thing. You know, that's where we want the industry to go, to realize that it's actually a benefit to be able to
yes.
say their products don't have
those toxins.
They're safer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paul in Duluth, hi.
Oh, hello, Kathleen and your guest. Another terrific show. I have two questions, and while I was on hold, I came up with about five more, but I'll keep it to two. My first question is the FDA is seriously underfunded. And I wonder if there's any funding. We've all heard the term unfunded mandate, and I worry if the FDA is going to just have this dumped on their shoulders without the funding to actually do it. And my other question is, I heard a while back, and I don't know if this is true, but one of the reasons why Japan had so blatantly violated the ban on whaling is because they extract a substance from whales called ambergris, which is a very valuable ingredient in perfumes. And I wonder if that's true. And I'd like to listen off the air because I'm getting an earache.
Okay, Paul. Okay, thanks very much for your call.
So on Paul's first question about the FDA funding, yes, very important. It wouldn't be possible for FDA to do this without funding mechanisms. And the way the bill would deal with that, and this is going to be controversial, but we think it needs to be done this way, is fees on the companies. And so that it's the industry and not the taxpayers who are funding the scientists to do the independent research to determine the safety of the chemicals they're using. And the bill would have sliding scale fees so that it would be only the bigger companies that would have to pay the fee. I think the cutoff is $1 million a year in sales or something. I'm not sure where that exact fee ended up, but it's a sliding scale fee that would charge fees based on how much money companies are making.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and on his second question, Japan
the whales.
And the whaling,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to that. It's certainly feasible.
Mm-hmm. Here's let's take a couple questions here on email. Somebody who was looking at your rating system, and there are some entries that say not enough information. Why is that? Also, this same person found that some of the products listed on the 0 to 2 hazard listing don't work, hair care products like gels. What can you say about the efficacy of a product that is all natural with no hazardous ingredients?
I certainly think there are very effective and great products that are all natural without the toxic ingredients. I've found them for myself that work, you know, shampoos that lather nicely and mascaras that stay on. Gels I haven't tried so much. So I think you do have to experiment around. I have also found products that don't work as well. That's true. You have to do some testing of things and see what you like, and I think that's different for everyone. And as for Skin Deep, Skin Deep tries to do a huge job without enough data because the data doesn't exist. So for that reason, there are some things in Skin Deep that people will complain about. But basically what the database is it is a massive store of information about cosmetic chemicals. So it's got about 60,000 products in there with all their ingredients. And then it matches those up against 50 of the leading government and academic sources of chemical hazards.
Mm.
So it merges all that chemical hazard info together. Then it matches that up with the ingredients and gives it a score. Now, there's challenges with that. A lot of the ingredients haven't been studied properly, and so for that, or at all. And so for that reason, Skin Deep will mark products if they contain unstudied ingredients. And so there's a lot of complicating factors that don't make it, you know, the 100% a place you can get all the info that you need about the chemicals in your products, because that's just impossible at this state given the information that we have. But I think it's a great place to start to give you the tools you need to figure out which are the most problematic products,
right,
the chemicals that are most toxic, and where to look for the safer alternatives.
Okay. Virginia is next from Royalton. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. Say, I was wondering how is one to know what is safe anymore? It seems that I thought anti-disestablishmentarianism was the longest word in the English language, and I'm finding otherwise as I start reading these labels. short of getting a degree in chemistry, how does one determine? If I wanted to make my own cleansing, for example, is there a listing somewhere of safe products or safe ingredients, not products?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we do have a list on our website of recipes to make your own products and things like that, and you can find that at safecosmetics.org in the Take Action section. So certainly there are simple ways to make some of these products, and they work. You could make soaps and lotions and things like that right at home. And I do think that, you know, there's a point at which, can we know for sure that everything's 100% safe? No, maybe not. But we can certainly know that we don't have to be exposed to phthalates and parabens and triclosan and sodium lauryl sulfate and all that. Those things are pretty easy to avoid by looking at the natural products. Again, you do have to look at the label, because some products marketed as natural do have the same toxins that the big regular products are using.
You know, unfortunately, most of us just don't have time to make our own soaps and lotions.
That's true.
We just don't.
I don't. I certainly don't.
Right.
Although I have to say, sometimes I use just food-grade oil on my skin, like coconut oil or sesame oil. And that's really nice.
Thanks, Virginia, for the call. We go next to Mary in Stockbridge. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. First of all, thank you for doing all of this work for us. I'm in my mid-50s and have been wearing cosmetics for a long time, and it is a very confusing and difficult issue for us, I'm sure. But my question is, I recently lost a job, essentially. I was working in a medium-sized office. I'd been with the company quite a long time, and I began having pretty severe to the emergency room type reactions to the fabric softener fragrance that began appearing in the office about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I've narrowed it down to some brands, but I was wondering if you've done any work on this or had any information, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Mary.
Well, certainly that happens. And the way, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the fragrances have sensitizing or allergenic chemicals in them. We found when we did our analysis that an average of 10 different kinds of sensitizers or allergens in the product. So it could be any one of that concoction or the mix that a person is allergic to. It can be difficult to figure out exactly what the allergy is to. Another thing that happens is that you can be exposed to a chemical or a product for a long time and be just fine, but your body's building up a sensitization to it. So there reaches a point when the allergic reaction triggers. And then from there, you're going to have allergic reactions to that substance every time you're exposed to it, and things can get worse. So it can be tough to trace it. You know, there are doctors who will do allergy patch tests. And if you can find one that can do it, that's a way that you could figure out. Examples could be formaldehyde allergies. A lot of people have those, or the quaternium 15 that I mentioned earlier in the baby shampoos. That's also used in a lot of makeups. So if you can trace it and then figure out to avoid, but probably it would be a good idea just to avoid fragrances in general at least as much as you can, and certainly avoiding that product.
We've had several people with comments about using these kinds of personal care products, all the chemicals in them, which get washed down the drain. So even if we carefully avoid buying the offending products, we're all exposed to increased levels in our water anyway. This is from Diane. It's therefore a public health issue and can't be considered only a matter of personal consumer choice.
Thank you. That I couldn't have said it better myself, and that's so important. And it's a big reason why I think this legislation is so important, because we can't just shop our way out of this problem. It's just not possible. Even as she said, if we buy the best products and do the best job we can to protect ourselves, we're still getting exposed to these chemicals from air, water, from other people who wear perfume or have fragrances in the office. So we have to get a handle on the problem by changing the rules in the industry and making the big companies reformulate to get rid of the most hazardous stuff.
Camille in Frankfort, Michigan. Hi.
Hi. I guess I'm going to change my question a little bit because you did answer some of what I called in for. The first thing is, you mentioned the standards in Europe, the things made in Europe, where, you know, they don't put as many chemicals in, or if they label them organic or something like that, it's you can trust it more, if I understood you correctly. And the other thing, the thing I wanted to ask, though, is what about perfumes and things that are made in Paris or made somewhere other than the United States? What can you say about those? And I'll take your responses off the air. Thank you.
Okay, so Europe is better in some regards. They have banned a lot more chemicals. You won't find dibutyl phthalate in nail polish, or things like coal tar or lead acetate, which you will still find in products in the U.S. So Europe does ban more things, and they also have some good certifications for personal care products that have caused, I think, more innovations, or at least companies in Europe a long time ago figured out how to get rid of parabens and all the stuff that some of the companies here are just figuring out now. But beyond that, Europe has a lot of the same problems that the U.S. does. For example, they don't have to label the chemicals in fragrances. They do require the listing of a bunch of allergens, but they don't ban them. So you might get a little more information about what's in fragrances sold in Europe, but I think you're still going to get the toxicity problems. You'd still probably find diethyl phthalate, because that particular phthalate's not banned in Europe. You'd still find a lot of the same allergens. And I just think that the fragrance industry has a lot of innovation work to do to figure out, and maybe it's not possible to do it with synthetic chemicals, and you've got to move toward more of the essential oils, or maybe give up the idea that a scent is supposed to last all day.
Right. Stacey, thank you so much for being with us this hour. It was most informative.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
Stacey is the co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. Information, go to Skin Deep, safeproducts.org, and you'll be able to get much more information.